Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight our guest is Brent Budowski, who is a columnist and journalist for The Hill .com, which is Washington, D.C. Political blog.
Yeah,
it's quite it's well known. Well,
he writes a lot of editorials, not only for them, but for other papers and blogs, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
And nice guy, very, very nice. We have a little bio on him. Is that recorded as well?
I'm trying to find it, yeah. It's not, unfortunately.
Leo's trying to find the little bio we have on him, so let me find that. And
there's one. But anyway, he'll be with us tonight, or we have a pre-recorded interview with him. And we'll be playing that about 8:30.
Yeah, here it is, right here.
Oh, okay. And we'll read that right before we bring him on.
And he's written an article called No Doom for Dems, and we talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
He's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Leo, of course, he mentioned some things to Leo, and it was like putting a red flag right in front of him. So Leo disagreed with him on a lot of things, and I disagreed with him on some things, too.
And so we had a heated argument.
But all in all, it was good. We ended up friends at the end. He was fun to talk to, and I really kind of liked him personally.
Yeah.
I just didn't agree with everything he had to say, and that's all right.
You know, when anybody talks about progressives and the Democrats together, it's kind of like an oxymoron, and it really gets my goat. And of course, we're independent. We're an independent.
With leanings towards.
We're a liberal, independent talk show. That's how we call it
as we see it, and we don't support all Democrats. We aren't against all Republicans.
Yeah, we are.
I'm
pretty much against all Democrats too. So it's not, you know, it's pretty much a straight out and out dislike for me. So, you know, very little.
That's
very
because
little
Leo placed his faith in the wrong people to begin with.
That's true.
And then he was really upset. But
because
I didn't do that.
I was kind of a believer in the system that might work, you know, back in the old days when we first started this show, and back in 2003.
I was already jaded.
Lila was already jaded. She didn't trust anybody, and although she went ahead and joined the Green Party there about that time, but that doesn't really mean anything because she's not really an active Green.
Not anymore.
You know, but
I got disappointed in them too.
Yeah, a lot of strange.
So there's no party.
So
we want our own political party.
Yes, the American Patriot Party, but that's already been taken. So we have the American Liberal Party, American Liberal Patriot Party. I don't know. We'll just call it the Steel Party.
I've decided I'm a social liberal and a fiscal conservative.
Which is what a lot of people are.
Yeah, I don't like to waste money, and I like the money to be spent properly.
Yeah.
But I'm socially liberal. I think that there's certain things that people should have. They should have a job and access to a job. They should have a home, a roof over their heads. They should have food, and they should have health care.
They should have clothing. They should have, you know,
those things that a modern society, we make enough money, we have enough money, we pay enough taxes to provide that for those that can't provide for themselves.
We don't need wars, and we don't need land grabs all over the world, and we don't need that world domination with our military. And, spending, $2 trillion or more a year on weaponry. It's just insane.
To blow up people.
Yeah,
and to blow up this beautiful planet.
Right.
Why should I pay my tax dollars to pollute the earth with explosives?
Yeah, that's basically what you're doing.
Why bother to
Why bother
to recycle 3 plastic bottles a week if my tax dollar is going to go to blowing up the earth and put pollution all over
it? Exactly.
I mean, why bother?
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Why bother to eat organic if we're blowing up weaponry and we're using nuclear power and waste all over the place?
And feeding our kids genetically modified foods and ourselves and just...
No, I'm talking about
ourselves.
Organic. I said, why bother with organic if everything that's falling down on us is polluted?
Yeah.
Then what's falling
There's
down
no
on those beautiful
anymore.
Organic vegetables is pollution, too. So,
right.
You know, it's all a scam.
Well, they found rocket fuel in celery and lettuce. a few years back.
Oh, great.
Much of California lettuce was banned because it had absorbed rocket fuel in there somehow. So somebody had obviously leaked rocket fuel in there.
Or leached it, or dropped it, or something. Aerosol sprayed it.
But nevertheless, it was there. So I don't know where that leaves us, but it leaves us in the ring.
Why don't you go into?
There was a couple of things I wanted to read here that we didn't get to read last night. But, there's this one where is it? It's coming up here. I thought this was an interesting article that I wanted to read tonight. I don't know if Lila wants to read it. It's a potent jungle vine brew has potential to treat addiction. Researchers say ayahuasca, found in the Peruvian rainforest, could be used for a variety of ailments. In the southern American jungles, it's a root. Ayahuasca is used in religious ceremonies to induce visions, also as a remedy to cure illness. New research suggests ayahuasca. I'm going to spell that out for you. A-Y-A-H-U-A-S-C-A. Ayahuasca. Ayahuasca. A jungle vine. Can be a powerful effect on the human central nervous system when brewed with other plants. Researchers say one of the most promising uses could be in treating drug and alcohol addiction. According to the World Health Organization, which you can trust them or not, I don't. Medicines derived from plants play a major role in healthcare of 80% of the world's population. That is true. Western medicine has synthesized many of these natural drugs, from the painkillers in willow bark to the anti-cancer compounds in the neem tree, and is constantly searching for more pharmaceuticals in the biodiversity of the world's forests. Ayahuasca is traditional plant-based medicine that has drawn the attention of investigators in the South American jungles. It is used in religious ceremonies to induce visions, also as a remedy to cure ills. Vine of the dead could help improve life. At the Ananshobo Spiritual Retreat Center in the rainforest near Iquitos, Peru, Shaman Alfredo Caruna Canayo shows off a selection of twisted leafy vine. What ayahuasca means is vine of the dead, he explained through an interpreter. Some people call it soul vine. Ayahuasca is known as a master plant, a very powerful remedy, and treats the whole person, body, mind, and soul. The ayahuasca can cure anything you have, the shaman says. Start with simple things, for example. It's very simple for cure to, or repel the bad energies from your insides. What is the bad energy? One of them could be the fears, then some wound or injury you have. Whether the plant is being used for religious or medicinal purposes, ayahuasca is taken only in ceremonial settings under the direction of experienced shaman. To drink it into a drink, also called ayahuasca, pieces of the vine are pounded into a pulp and combined with several other plants, then brewed down to 8 or more hours into a thick orange liquid. The combination, Shaman Alfredo says, is critical. Only by itself, this plant doesn't work good. You have to add this with the other plant, the caruca, the cacruna, which is the help to the ayahuasca. In Shipibo culture, they believe that the cacruna is the wife of the ayahuasca, because they help and work together. A sophisticated chemical concoction. An international research team is investigating the pharmaceutical potential of ayahuasca, known scientifically as Banisteriopsis caupi. Don't ask me. I'm not even going to spell it. Principal Investigator Charles Graub is a professor of psychiatry and pediatrics at UCLA Medicine. His team has done a chemical analysis of the medical drink. Pieces of a vine are pounded into pulp, combined with several other plants, then brewed down. The active ingredients in the brew are DMT. A naturally occurring brain chemical similar to serotonin and a natural antidepressant. DMT is inactivated in the human gut, but when combined with the antidepressant, it can be absorbed by the body. Grove said one of the ayahuasca's most promising uses is in treating drug and alcohol addiction. Number one, it does not appear to be addictive, and the individuals do not develop a tolerance. They do not go through withdrawals, and generally speaking, it's very unusual for people to take it on consecutive days over an extended period of time. The potion also has antiparasitic properties, which can help prevent malaria. There is also some evidence that it diminishes the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. An illegal brew for now. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration classifies the principal active ingredient in ayahuasca as Schedule 1 controlled substance, which is not considered to have any legitimate medical use. As a result, the ayahuasca brew is illegal in the United States, and most of the pharmaceutical studies are being conducted in South America. Grove says the studies are important. They have great potential to learn about the range of ayahuasca and to explore the therapeutic value. So it's illegal here, but you got to go to South America to get it.
So if you're rich, you can afford all these things. In the meantime, the government interferes with your ability to have access
right.
to them.
An ancient remedy, you know, safe to everybody, is illegal here.
Mention what you said about John McCain.
Oh, yeah, I heard today. I'm not sure of the particulars of the bill, but John McCain just put up a bill to try to eliminate natural remedies, and reduce them from the marketplace.
You wonder how much money he's getting
John
from
McCain,
pharmaceuticals.
John McCain is a piece of work. He's just a piece of crap, all right? Please, if anybody's interested, please go to my book. Check out my book, Naked at the Mic. I've got two articles there about McCain, Lieberman. Especially McCain. I got plenty on McCain there. And satires. A satire. I got one in there that says that's entitled John McCain and Joe Lieberman were awarded the honorary buttocks of the Senate. That's how it is. Yeah. Honorary buttocks of the Senate. It's very good. It's a very good article. Very funny. And it compares them to the two cheeks on the ass of the Senate, where you have to read it to get it. It's really clever, I thought, and it was posted on my website for a long time. But anyway, that's what they still are. They still are. It hasn't changed. I wrote this back in 2005, and they're the same. They're just big butts, butt cheeks on the ass of Congress. And anyway. We go from here. We will go on. But anyway, there's a cure for all you addicts out there. So let's see, where are we here? We're going to go check out my friend here.
See what else there is for news.
See
if there's some updates here. We'll bring you some news of the moment.
News of the moment. Should put a...
John was saying we should check out Ross' story.
I check it out. I don't care for it.
Oh, you checked it out?
Yeah. Ross' stories. They're good once in a while, but...
No, it was that video he was talking about.
Maybe
it wasn't on Ross' story. It was on
The Ugly Truth, the general election or the election of a general, and what democracy truly is. The general election, why are you electing a general? A general over what you might ask, if it's very simple. I don't know what the hell this is. I don't care. It doesn't look like an intelligent one.
We know about the earthquake shakes Indonesia. Red Ice Radio, Nigel Kerner, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. Let's read that. That might be. well, it might be interesting.
It's not interesting. I read it. It's about aliens sucking up the eyeballs of. It really sucks. This is more in line with what we're doing.
What if it was reported that they are spraying aluminum? Could a ban of transparent reporting at El Silamore conference be an attempt to cover up worldwide contamination from stratospheric aerosol geoengineering programs? Geoengineers gathered once again near Monterey, California at the El Silamar International Conference on Climate Intervention Technologies meeting to develop norms and guidelines for what they say will be controlled experimentation on geoengineering the planet. While many claim that stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, aka chemtrail programs, are in full-scale deployment, organizers of this meeting showed a lack of transparency by either denying or holding poor reporters to a high standard of rules, which limited what information was brought to the attention of the public. While we might never know how much information from the conference was suppressed in articles and reports, we do know some of the information that was not included. The issue of the current SAGA deployment and the use of aluminum in these programs seemed to be missing from reports and articles that came out of the conference. Let's see what else it says. Mauro Oliveira, webmaster of Geoengineering Watch, said that aluminum became a concern to many after the American Association for the Advancement of Science meeting, when independent journalists sent shockwaves around the world after breaking the story of scientists discussing the plausibility of spraying 10 to 20 megatons of aluminum in the sky in SAGA campaigns. Francis Mangles, a retired USDA USF biologist, commented on the use of aluminum by saying, "Although aluminum is an abundant element, it does not exist naturally in the environment in a free form. Dispersing massive amounts of ultrafine aluminum particles, as proposed by geoengineers in the stratosphere, would have unquantifiable human health and environmental impacts." When scientists were asked about the risks associated with the use of aluminum sprayed as an aerosol in the SAG program, they admitted they have only begun to research aluminum and have published nothing. They also admitted that something terrible could be found in the future that they don't know about. Also, when asked about deployment of current programs, scientists denied that any SAG programs have been deployed. This contradicted the findings of many who claim that SAG programs are well underway and that high amounts of aluminum and other harmful substances from these programs are being found, resulting in the devastation of ecosystems and health of people around the world.
Like the AAS meeting, the Asilomar Geoengineering Conference hosted one of the world's leading geoengineers. Environmental groups and scientists have gathered to discuss various issues relating to SAG. Unlike the AAS meeting, reporters were either denied attendance or to a high standard of rules that included a ban on daily reporting, quoting, and recording anything from the meeting without the consent of presenters. Stuart Howe was one of the reporters denied access into the conference. Howe helped break the story about aluminum when he was sent to the AAS meeting in San Diego to report for InfoWars. He feels that he was denied access because of this and his reporting of evidence that suggests SAG programs are full-scale deployment. Howe said, "Due to the devastating effects of aluminum and worldwide claims of current deployment, transparent reporting of this could devastate the entire SAG agenda, compromising billions of dollars in contracts." We went on to say that it was apparent that the meeting had no intention of being transparent.
Whereas many reporters were denied access to the event, some privileged journalists did have the opportunity to attend. Although some of the articles about the conference appeared to be critical of geoengineering, they largely ignored the use of aluminum and other serious issues that could have impacted or changed the damaging components of the SAG agenda. Due to their agreement to the strict, non-transparent guidelines of the conference, the reporting journalists not only helped keep some of the meeting secret, they also helped hide the fact that geoengineers are planning to use aluminum in SAG programs. Some articles were also falsely written, stating that geoengineers are planning on using sulfur in the various SAG program campaigns. This contradicts articles written by some reporters who attended the AAS meeting and quoted scientists as stating that they initially considered using sulfur for the program. However, aluminum is more effective and will be the ingredient considered for use. To date, scientists have not corrected the journalists who falsely reported the use of less damaging sulfur instead of harmful aluminum as being an ingredient for the SAG programs.
Let's look at this issue a little more closely. People from around the world are witnessing white trails behind airplanes and believe them to be a product of SAG programs that scientists deny exist. People are also reporting test results of high amounts of aluminum, barium, strontium in their snow, rain, and soil where the alleged spraying is occurring. These are the exact substances that scientists are considering implementing into the various SAG programs discussed at the AAS meeting. Shockwaves were sent around the globe after the AAS meeting because of reports that led many to believe that the destruction of ecosystems and the massive amounts of aluminum found in the snow, rain, and soil are in fact from the SAG programs that have already been deployed. As a result of these reports, many around the world are asking questions about the current deployment and dangers of using aluminum in these programs. And finally, journalists are restricted from reporting certain facts from this conference that could be damaging to the SAG agenda.
Could transparent reporting of certain facts threaten the current and future deployment of SAG programs around the world? Could denying independent reporters the freedom to openly report on the meeting by an attempt to cover up allegations that the SAG programs are in full-scale deployment and are also destroying ecosystems around the world with the use of aluminum? Is it possible that the reporters who are allowed into this meeting were invited for the purpose of protecting the corporate and political interests of those involved with SAG programs? What would the political and monetary implications be for those who have vested interest in SAG if the larger public are made aware of multiple environmental and health effects of spraying megatons of aluminum into our environment? Whatever the reason for this lack of transparency and denial of information, we, the public, need to hold both reporters and scientists to a higher degree of professionalism, transparency, and ethical consideration when it comes to these and other issues of public interest. The future of our health and environment is dependent on it. More information and videos on the subject of geoengineering chemtrails can be found on my blog at http://truthmediaproductions.blogspot.com.
And you can also go to connecticutskywatch.com. That'll give you a really, really broad view of what's really going on with lots of bills and research done and video and so on. John Brennan, who's our exclusive reporter on Tuesday nights, he's a chemtrail activist, environmental reporter, has put up his webmaster Ronnie had put up an excellent site called Connecticut Skywatch. So I suggest you go to that, ConnecticutSkywatch.com. Check it out. And
I was just looking to see if there was anything on their site that might be interesting.
No. I just wanted to get that particular one. That's his blog right there. Okay. Tyranny response team engages Gestapo youth.
Let's play that.
All right. All great tyrannies work at capturing the minds of the youth. No longer are children going to be learning survival skills, camp, and hunting abilities. Instead, they are training to be police and control us. This is how the Boy Scouts of America, black uniform-wearing authorities, understand that this is what police states always do before they truly turn the entire system against the public at large. This also serves to condition you to accept roving SSS-style police on the streets everywhere. This is all for you, the average patriotic American. Please see the evidence below. Don't let the youth become indoctrinated. Inform them about the Constitution. This is a short video on the Boy Scouts in black uniforms, and see what this is about.
So we'll listen to it. South New Jersey Tyranny Response Team.
Often at this local supermarket, we find the sheriff explorers at the entrance asking for donations.
Hamilton, New Jersey. particular use are begging money for a federal, for a government program where we were taxed higher than everyone else in the nation. They're not in there.
Yes, they are. They're tables against this wall.
Where we're taxed higher than everywhere else in the nation, our government can't afford to. What's up, guys? Pretty interesting.
So what are you guys collecting money for?
The Explorers Conference.
You're doing something in Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
What is that? What's going to happen in Atlanta?
Yeah, what do you guys have in Atlanta?
Well, you can't understand a word they're saying.
It's a bunch of kids acting as thugs. You know, the sheriff group collecting monies for to support their little club. So I didn't forget that. It's a pretty lousy video.
J.P. Morgan instructed homeowners to stop making mortgage payments, as that was the only way to be considered for a loan modification.
Then takes their homes.
Then repossessed their home when they followed the bank's advice, a couple claims in federal court. I've seen this happen to so many people, their attorney said. When they come in here to tell me their story, I can actually tell it to them. Bays and Kahuda Jani sued Morgan Chase and its predecessor, Washington Mutual Bank, on their own in behalf of the public. Good for them.
Let's read more about that.
I hope they won, and I hope they got triple damages. When they called the 800 number, they were specifically told that as long as they were current on their mortgage, they wouldn't even be considered for loan modification. The couple's attorney, Peter Reisner, said in an interview. In their federal complaint, the Johnnies say they contracted the bank in December 2008 to indicate they were having trouble paying their mortgage and would like to discuss a possible loan modification. The Johnnies say the bank representative told them that they would not work with plaintiffs at all because they were currently not in breach of their loan payment. Plaintiffs were specifically advised at the time to stop making payments for a period of 3 months, at which time the defendants would consider a loan modification. Plaintiffs were specifically informed that as long as they were current in their mortgage, the defendants would not be considered a loan modification, would not be considered for a loan modification. Reasonably relying on the direction of defendants and the plaintiffs stopped making their loan payments. Plaintiffs are informed and believe they are alleged that the defendants immediately reported to the various credit reporting agencies that plaintiffs were late on their mortgage payments. On about June 23rd, defendants sent a letter to the plaintiff entitled Notice of Intent to Foreclose, indicating the payments were past due on their mortgage in the amount of $100.65. Is that right? And the plaintiffs need to bring current within 30 days to avoid foreclosure proceedings. No notice of default accompanying the letter, nor was the notice of default ever served to the plaintiff. Months of correspondence between the Johnnies and Chase followed, with the Johnnies repeatedly sending Chase documents it had requested, and Chase repeatedly sending them letters claiming it had not received proper documentation and that their loan modification was in jeopardy. Jeez. The Johnnies say they immediately called Chase, which told them that their house had not been foreclosed and that people who were approaching the property were doing so illegally. Just Johnnies say this insanity continued for months. They called the bank again in February 2010 and asked why their house was still listed as having been foreclosed in October 2009. Chase told them it was all a mistake and the bank simply had not updated their records, according to the complaint. During the same conversation, plaintiff asked why defendants continue to accept mortgage payments from plaintiffs if the house had been foreclosed. Plaintiffs demanded to know where their payments were going, demanded a payment history from the defendants. Plaintiffs further demanded to know why defendants' RIO department had indicated that plaintiff no longer owned the house and that it was now in fact owned by the bank. They say that bankrupt Janet again reiterated that this was a mistake and that she would take care of it. Janet further claimed that she, at that moment, was sending emails and correspondence everywhere within the company to rectify the situation and to please allow her 10 days to clear up the mess. The mess, in fact, was never cleaned up. Janet further promised in the same conversation that someone would review the file and get back to them within 10 days. Nobody did.
It goes on and on and on. But it's like, yeah, the bank screwed them. There's Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase, bunch of friggin' crooks. So, yeah, we can forget those guys. If you got a mortgage with them, refinance it with somebody else. Just get the hell out from under J.P. Morgan Chase.
That modification program is still not working well. But it's time for our interview anyway.
Yeah.
Psychiatrists say that being angry is a mental illness. I don't think so.
Proposed updates to Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders are prompting many to question whether or not the psychiatric profession itself has gone crazy. The latest addition to the alleged mental ill would include hoarders, people who get angry every now and again, lazy people, and even those who get outraged over things like sex and violence on television. Since its first publication in 1952, the DSM has grown exponentially larger with each subsequent edition. Many people are lambasting the American Psychiatric Association for trying to establish virtually all behavior as some sort of mental disorder that should be treated with psychiatric drugs. For this last revision, they've set up a special task force to decide if behavior like bitterness, extreme shopping, or overuse of the internet should be included, explains Professor And the science underlying all this is very shaky to non-existent.
Hmm.
I can go on, but it's like, why bother? Maybe you got the point. And, here's this jerk Lieberman. What does he say?
Avigdor
Lieberman warns Palestinians. Israeli foreign minister Avigdor, who is the same guy that wanted all 13-year-old Palestinians to be killed, boys, would annul previous peace accords with Palestinians if they decide to go ahead with plans to unilaterally declare an independent state. Speaking to Israelis, Yeduit, the newspaper on Tuesday, Lieberman threatened Palestinians that such a move would prompt Israel to annex part of the West Bank and revoke 1990s Israel-Palestinian peace agreements. I had one. Any unilateral decision will release us from our commitment and will allow us to make unilateral decisions, Lieberman said. For example, imposing Israeli sovereignty on certain areas, cutting off all kinds of ties and transfers of money, a string of benefits and agreements put into place since the peace accords. So this guy means friggin' business.
So it's time.
And if the Palestinians want a state, they're going to say no. They're going to say impossible. They're going to beat them up and take all their money, and the United States is going to stand by and just let it happen.
Yeah.
So that's the way it is, folks, on the whatever day it is today. And I'm going to start...
The 7th of April?
7th of April.
So it's now time to have our interview, if you put that
on. Where's that write-up, a little write-up? Yeah, there it is.
I can't see it. There's not enough light.
Our guest tonight is Brent Budowski, and is a regular columnist on TheHill.com, and he served as a legislative assistant to U.S. Senator Lloyd Benson, responsible for commerce and intelligence matters, including one of the core drafters of the CIA Identities Law, served as legislative director to Congressman Bill Alexander and Chief Deputy Whip House of Representatives, currently a member of the International Advisory Council of the Intelligence Summit, left government in 1990 for marketing and public affairs business, including corporate management, entertainment, and talent management. So that's our guest tonight. He's kind of in the thick of things, yeah.
What did entertainment and politics have in common?
Yeah,
they're all actors.
They're all actors. They're all looking for agents.
Yeah.
So, So here he is. I started this, I recorded this a little bit for the thing I started it, but you'll get the gist of it. It's about half an hour.
Yeah, it's a good interview. He's a great guy.
I hope you enjoy it.
Than most people expect for a variety of reasons. Now, we've had one of them that was moderately positive that just came out last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm right about the next two or three, remember we heard it. We'll see. Then what you're going to get is the numbers will stabilize for Democrats. And I think the doomsayers will probably be on the defensive and starting to back off. But what I've been projecting is that jobs will come back not as fast as we want, but faster than the political analysts think. So I'm not saying it's a bed of roses for Democrats. They're going to lose some seats in both the House and in the Senate.
Well, I personally, I mean, it's not like you got people that you're supporting, or at least Eileen was supporting or something in one of your...
I will support the ones that I think... stand up for the values that I personally believe in. I'm supporting, for example, Lieutenant Governor Bill Holter in Arkansas running against Senator Blanche Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, what is he? Is he a Democrat or?
Oh, yeah, no, he is a Democrat. He's currently the Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah.
He's, you know, what I call myself, a progressive populist.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what Democrats ought to represent. I call myself kind of a bull moose Democrat in the tradition of Theodore Roosevelt. Ask the banks, protect the environment.
Yeah, but Theodore Roosevelt was a Republican.
Yeah, well, he was a Republican.
Yeah.
He ended up running in 1912 as a bull moose.
Yeah.
He left the Republicans.
Then he lost his shirt.
Well, actually, you know, he did better than any third party did in history, but what's really interesting...
Better than Perot?
Yeah. If you go back and you look at the platform, it's worth Googling.
Really?
And the platform of the 1912 Bull Moose Party of Roosevelt. It reads like the progressive agenda today. I mean, on that kind of stuff, he was way ahead of his time. But Bill Holter in Arkansas is like that.
Mm.
Whereas Blanche Lincoln, the incumbent Democratic senator, is the senator from insurance companies and banks.
Right.
More than.
Yeah, but so is all of the Obama administration. So it's like, you know.
But you got to draw distinctions. That's
nothing,
why.
Right. It's just another thread in the quilt. You know.
I think if he wins that primary, it'll be the shot heard all over Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and running against somebody who really embodies, in my view, Blanche Lincoln,
yeah.
and a Democrat that goes to fundraisers and then votes with insurance companies and banks.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, I just to interject, I got to tell you something because I think it's worthy of a mention in your blog, if you haven't already touched on it. Former governor corrupt John Rowland, all right, of Connecticut,
yeah.
is interviewing for a position as a radio talk show host on WTIC, which is a 50,000-watt radio station up here and syndicated with Infinity, you know.
Good grief.
Yeah. This guy
comment?
This guy served a year and a day in jail, all right, came out. And then somebody in Waterbury, which is notorious for all the crooks and thieves of we've had the last president, the last mayor from Waterbury, one of the last mayors from Waterbury is serving a 40-year prison sentence for pedophilia and total absolute corruption of the office.
They ought to give him a cable show.
And then another guy was spent 5 years, I think, or 10 years. What was that? Santacero? I mean, he was involved with the mob and all this kind of stuff. That was a whole big scandal. And then everybody from Waterbury. Guess who else is from Waterbury? Our former head of Homeland Security, none other than Chertoff.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and Rowland was the number one corrupt governor of all times we've had. He even served in jail. So, and now, he's going to be rewarded by possibly getting a job on the largest radio station in Connecticut.
That's amazing.
Well, that's after experience becoming a preacher or something.
Oh, yeah. He became a born-again guy when he got out of prison. And now he's doing some little... evangelical Lutheran church or something.
Selling God.
Yeah, so it's like, the guy, it's totally, absolutely flabbergasting.
In career path, you find God,
Yeah,
they just do a talk show.
I guess so. There's been a certain history of other people doing the same thing.
Yeah, like Coulson lived. Coulson's making a good living at it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the guy served jail time.
But getting back to Obama, what was your biggest disappointment in him so far?
That he has not been a changed president the way he said he would be.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did instead is make deals on a lot of issues, from banks to insurance. With a lot of the lobbyists and a lot of the campaign donors to water down the reforms. So he is, I mean, the health insurance bill, but what I said, I was a big supporter of the public option.
Oh, me too.
Or Medicare buy-in of some
absolutely.
Kind. Or Medicare for all, even better.
Absolutely.
And I think what we ended up on the bill is basically an all insurance company operation without any kind of a public option.
Yeah, it's just like what they did with the Social Security bill and the big donut hole and every other god-awful thing.
Yeah, so,
you know, it's
only one example. But it's symptomatic of the way he has governed so far. I mean, he hasn't done anything about the Wall Street bonuses whatsoever.
Right.
No.
So far, they have not done anything on Wall Street reform.
Yeah, who is this idiot Tazar guy they've got, you know?
I know him. Ken Feinberg's a good guy.
Yeah, but what a doofus kind of job that is.
Now, the problem is the job.
The job is ridiculous.
But Ken's a good guy. I worked when he was with Ted Kennedy and I was with Senator Lloyd Benson. And we worked on criminal sentencing reform together.
Mm-hmm.
And he has done the best he could. The problem he has, number one, is the law. Okay?
Yeah.
And the bigger problem, which it doesn't give him the latitude to do much, although he is trying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the bigger problem he has, enough to answer your question earlier, again, is Timothy Geithner, a Treasury Secretary who might as well be a Republican.
Yeah.
And when Geithner sends the signal to the banks.
He's a globalist, and he's not only a globalist, but he was the governor of the Federal Reserve, for crying out loud.
No, he was the worst, the president of the Federal Reserve,
New
York.
I thought he was the governor of
the Federal
Reserve.
Yeah, he actually ran it for about 5 years.
Yeah.
And I would say he was the worst president of the New York Fed in the history of the New York Fed. Every scandal, corruption, screw-up that happened, he was a part of since the late 1990s.
Well, why did he get nominated? What was the thing?
Well, he failed upward, which tends to happen in modern politics.
God.
And again, that goes to Obama.
Yeah.
When Obama was in Iowa campaigning for the nomination, I don't recall him saying, I'm going to appoint Bush's bailout guy.
Yeah, I mean, what's that all about, you know?
Yeah,
you might as well have kept Paulson on, for crying out loud.
Yeah, but that's why I'm disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it on the bailout. You can see it on the lack of attacking the Wall Street bonuses that are morally obscene and financially ridiculous.
What happened to this big clawback thing that Sanders was supposed to do?
Well, that may or may not come back in when they do financial reform again. They should have done it all along. But, you know, you got to watch these guys. They talk a good game, you know, but when it comes down to it, liberal Democrats are not fighters anymore the way my hero Robert Kennedy was a fighter.
Yeah.
Okay? Liberal Democrats will go on MSNBC and say, I'm a great hero, I'm a great liberal, I'm going to fight for you. You know, give your donations to imaliberaldemocrathero.com. And they talk a good game. And I have some very specific people in mind, by the way. I call them the cable television liberals. But then when it comes down to the fight back in Congress, they surrender. Okay? I mean, why is it that Joe Lieberman can say, if you include a public option, I will never, ever support the bill? But then the liberals say, if you don't include a public option, I'll support the bill anyway and compare it to Franklin Roosevelt.
Right.
Who wins?
Mm.
You know, when you have that kind of a dichotomy, the bad guys will win.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I've written this in my book, bro, and I put it out there. And I'm telling you, you know, we have got the most cowardly group of cowardly Congress I've ever seen, okay, for the last 10 years running, for sure, if not longer.
Well,
right.
And
as far as the executive
committee,
Obama, my God, what have we done to ourselves as a nation? I mean, we got the worst.
It's not that they're cowardly. They're owned by special interest groups.
It's both. I mean, the title of the book I'd like to write is Democrats Without Balls. Number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, you're also right that they are bought and paid for by dirty campaign money, Republicans. That, I mean, yeah, I did a piece about the Supreme Court case, which I consider on campaign finance. I think that's the worst single decision since slavery, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, and it was corrupt to the core, was the title. And, you know, the city was corrupted to the core before that decision.
Well, it's kind of like...
That decision just ups the ante and makes it even more corrupt. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's a great, like the great stories about Tammany Hall, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what it was about. It's like, that's what we're running here, you know?
Well, Tammany Hall, though, you know, which in some ways...
They did have some order to it, though, didn't they?
Well, it had some order and it had some loyalty to it. I mean...
Yeah, loyalty, it's true.
I mean, I've lived in Chicago... And you could take the old machine in Chicago, the curly machine, the Tammany Hall machine. You know, but if nothing else, okay, you had a problem, you pick up the phone, dial a number, somebody answers, they solve the problem. Okay? There was at least some degree of responsibility and accountability. Sure, they were corrupt, but they also had responsibility and accountability. So you knew who to call. That guy was responsible. He would take the call and solve the problem.
Yeah.
Now what you have is this big, giant blob in Washington or Albany or whatever the capital may be, where everybody shovels it around, and, you know, you end up with a well-intentioned but 22-year-old staff person, unless you got the big money. Then the congressman, senator, governor comes right on the phone. And you don't get anything solved. You don't get anything done unless you can buy to have it done. And so, you know, whatever John Edwards' shortcomings, and there were many, when he said two Americas, he was absolutely right about that. That's what you got. You got the guys who can write the big checks, and then everybody else.
Yeah, the guy had twos on his mind. I mean, he was dealing with the video filmer.
Oh, he had his own problem.
And he was thinking of two things at the same time. I mean, you know, it's amazing.
I mean, you know,
he
had been right about that. It was actually... the best formulation that I've heard. I mean, you know, the problem with, to flip it around, the problem with Obama is he wants to play both sides.
Yeah.
He wants to be everybody's pal. And you know...
What could he do that would reclaim your respect?
Well, number one, get rid of Timothy Geithner, which I've been suggesting now for 3 or 4 months.
Get rid of Rahm Emanuel.
You know, and put somebody in there.
Right.
Who knows what to do and will do the right thing. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the top is what Now, on the Wall Street reforms, that's the next big fight here in Washington. Okay.
Oh, okay.
It's important that it would take us 2 hours to discuss, more the Glass-Steagall kind of stuff, which means you take, separate the depositors' money in the banks away from the speculators' money. So that they're not, you know, the big fancy pants guys on Wall Street are not speculating with the money of the people in this audience. And when they lose that money and go broke, getting bailed out by the people in this audience through their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I hope he will do, and it would restore some of my confidence, and not everything he's done is wrong, you know, would be to take a really tough position when the banking legislation comes in. Now, this should have been done 8 months ago. They should not have allowed the banks out of the federal money. Once you gave them the bailout and it was done, you should have made them reform their executive pay back then. You should have forced them to stop giving out these obscene and ridiculous bonuses, which are a moral crime against the country, okay? What they should have done back then, before they gave back the money, is starting loaning money to small business. Okay, which they're still not doing, despite the bailout. Okay?
And I don't understand that.
Have done as well, is they should have stopped banks from raising everybody's credit card rate.
Mm.
When they passed the credit card bill, that bill gave 8 months before it even became effective. And in those 8 months, everybody in the audience got a credit card rate increase, or two, or three, or four.
Mm.
Okay? I mean, and that was bought and paid for by bank lobbyists. Okay? What they should have done on health care is a public option, or Medicare for everybody.
Right.
Something to create an alternative. Now, I'll tell you, you heard it here, the health care thing ain't even close to done yet. Because the first time the insurers start ripping people off again, which will be measured in hours to days, not months to years, I predict, and before the election, that'll be back on the table again. Because people are going to get angry again. They're already angry. So what I wish he had is a Treasury Secretary who would fight for the people and not act like a lobbyist for the banks. I'd like to see a change there. That would be a big deal. That was the worst appointment he made, in my opinion, okay?
Mm. I think he made everybody
nervous,
Kevin.
Watch closely to see how hard the Democrats and the president fight. The harder they fight, I'll be with them. If not, I'll be back saying they're sold out again.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't see. I just don't. I don't have any faith in this Congress or this president, and you know. And I'm beginning to have a little more faith in the people, but seeing this, I don't know, Brent. I don't have the faith in these Democrats. Okay, the Democrats. Okay, just ridiculous. And Lila's all upset because she's a Boston liberal, and you know, when I damn all Democrats, it bothers her.
I'm a Kennedy Democrat.
That's what I'm saying. You guys get sensitive to it.
And I think John Kerry's a good man.
Tell me more about Kerry, because I think he's a pitiful, miserable piece of work.
No. Kerry is actually.
Oh, he's a wonderful guy. Oh God, come on, please.
Well, convince Leo. Why do you say that?
That Kerry is a wonderful guy because, that guy is just one piece of mud in my eye.
Now, well, he is one of the people who fought harder.
He wouldn't even fight for his own presidency, for crying out loud.
I agree with you.
Yeah, he let everybody abandon him. I mean, the guy was a piece of crap. I was never more furious at any miserable piece of crap politician than I was at that guy. And I had plenty of I lived with Lieberman, Roland, Dodd, all of the assholes, okay? But this guy takes the cake as far as I'm concerned.
No, I think they should have challenged Ohio as well. But I'm talking about...
How about New Mexico, Florida, Ohio, everywhere? You know, the guy was...
Kerry, the problem was Ohio. Okay, that was...
I'm crying out loud. The guy was pathetic. You know, he's a pathetic wastrel.
That is a problem that all Democrats have had, really, since the year 2000.
Yeah, but Kerry took the dump on everybody on that one, I'll tell you.
In the Senate, I think, if I had to rank the liberal Democrats on do you stand up for things... He would be well above the average, in my view.
If I could have challenged Kerry to a duel that day, okay, I would have done it. The day after he conceded.
Oh, I agree.
If I would, I would have challenged him to a duel right on the White House lawn, I swear to God, right in the Capitol building, because, I mean, what a traitor.
Well, yeah. He just gave up is the problem.
He was a traitor. He got $50 million for giving up and didn't give a dime of it to anybody for any kind of fight, all right? I mean, he took the money and ran.
Well, that is what Democrats tend to do.
Yeah, you got that right.
But Dean did the same thing. He made $50 million and packed his bags in New Hampshire, and everybody said, hee-ha, take care, sucker. And then he became the Democratic National Committee chairman. I mean, what a piece of crap this guy was.
You mean Howard?
Howard. Yeah. Howie the Duck, you know?
I'm not going to...
Oh, God, don't tell me. These guys are pathetic.
He's one of the most honorable fighters, Howard Dean.
Oh, God. You're killing me, man. You're absolutely killing me.
That's life, babe, you know, I mean...
I have no faith in that son of a bitch, or Kerry, or Lieberman, or any Democrat running, I swear to God.
Howard Dean was fighting for the public option, as I was. Long after Barack Obama gave it away, which Barack Obama did. And Howard Dean pissed off the White House big time because he wouldn't go along with the charade. Okay? And I'm just telling you, that is a fact that Howard Dean was fighting to the end. Howard Dean spoke the truth. I happen to agree with him on health care. And Howard Dean, compared to the White House, was an angel and a saint on health care.
On health care, I'll agree with you with that. But there are other things that I have questions.
Well,
I feel the same way that Leo does.
I just came out of the health care fight where the Democratic Party, in my view, sold its soul, on this.
Mm.
I thought it was pathetic. And by the way, the real story on the public option is the White House, including Obama, had secret meetings and made a secret deal with the hospital lobbyists about eight or nine months ago, and they gave it away.
Yeah, that's why he didn't say anything.
That's why when he pretended he was for it, he was against it. And that's why the Congress didn't put it in. And it was one of these secret deals. You want to know why I was disappointed? He made the same kind of deal with the drug companies. And you know, it's amazing. So you ended up with a health care bill that looked like Richard Nixon in 1972.
It was a big disappointment.
Oh, it was a big disappointment for me.
Mm.
I mean, it may have been slightly better to vote for it than against it, which was what I said at the time.
Mm.
But one of the reasons you haven't seen me on MSNBC in the last 3 weeks is I refuse to go on television and say this is Franklin Roosevelt or Lyndon Johnson. Yeah, I won't say that stuff.
So you're not willing to be a cheerleader.
You know, you got to have some honor in this. And to
mm-hmm.
me, it was a moderate Republican bill from 20 years ago.
Mm.
That's my take on it.
Well, my hope is that changes can be made down the line that are more positive for the American people. I don't know whether I'm whistling in the wind thinking about that.
I don't know. You know, I mean, to be totally honest, the real, you know, the danger that Democrats and progressives have is because their leadership in Washington is so inept and weak.
But the problem that I see isn't just that. It's they themselves are weak because they will not get out of the damn party and start something reasonable.
Yeah, but look, you know, from their point of view, and I include myself, I'm a bitter ender in terms of fighting for stuff like the public option.
Yeah.
From the point of view of the average rank-and-file progressive, not in Washington, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way they view the world, and I agree with this, they busted their tail in 2006 and elected a Democrat. They busted their tail in 2008 and they elected Democrats. They elected a Democrat who compared himself to Abraham Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt to be the president, who was going to be a president like Caroline Kennedy's father, with 60 Democratic senators and an 80-seat majority in the House, and they couldn't do a damn thing with that. And what a lot of Democrats around the country say, and what I've said, you know, what the hell more do you want us to do?
Well, it's not that they couldn't. It's that they wouldn't.
Well, they wouldn't.
They wouldn't do it. Okay, Nancy Pelosi would not impeach the son of a bitch. All right?
Oh, I don't think
they would go after. They wouldn't go after Bush. They wouldn't go after Cheney. They wouldn't go after anybody. You know, and I hold her.
They can't pass a health care bill with a public option. That's the problem. Forget impeachment. That's baby talk.
That's not baby talk. You know, that guy should be in war crimes, man.
A public option.
Bush is a war criminal. Yeah.
But it's supported by 60-70% of the American people. They couldn't pass it.
Mm-hmm.
On a bill that only is supported by 40%, they couldn't pass a public option.
Yeah, it's because they're whips.
It's because they're whips.
They're
well, they're
because
already
they're bought and
they're sold.
The president has seen.
We're arguing for the same cause here. I mean, they're wimps.
The issue, not impeachment. The issue is the power game on the.
No, the issue would have been
in this audience.
Bush when they had the chance.
Wall Street bonuses.
That would have scared the living Jesus out of the Republican Party, and it would have straightened this country out, okay?
Well,
and we would have had some kind of credibility and some kind of courage in that Congress, and then somebody might have believed in those Democrats. But right now they're useless.
In Boston or
mm-hmm.
Springfield or California or New York, they did their job and they elected these people to Washington.
Yeah.
And you can't ask more.
No, they did what. No, I totally agree with you on that, and I have the greatest respect
like
for the people that tried.
And they
but
end
at the
up
same
doing
time,
the same old crap.
They got screwed over again, you know. And they were electing. I mean, it's like if, you know, trying to hold up a dead man. Eventually, he's going to fall the minute you let him go. You know what I mean? And that's
well,
what happened
know,
there.
The question now, and I don't have
a dead
answer.
Party.
What do you do next?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, I'm at this point. I'm in the mode of fighting. To try to get a Wall Street bill that is a progressive bill. We'll see whether they can do it. That's the next fight in the next couple of hours and days and weeks. And by the way, the next thing after that, which they probably won't be able to do, is climate change. And I'll tell you one thing, John Kerry has done more to keep climate change alive than everybody.
Yeah, well, curse his soul, man, because I tell you, that's the biggest fraud going.
What is?
Climate change.
That's a fraud. It's an Al Gore fraud. Everybody in the world knows it except Al Gore.
You don't think there's global warming?
There's not global warming. It's been proven that every single statistic that they have brought about is fraudulent.
You write your book, you'll get rich.
Absolutely fraud.
Warming.
Okay, absolutely fraud.
You really don't believe that?
There is no global warming. It's been proven. It's been proven time and time again by 300,000 scientists have actually signed a petition, okay, that states there is no global warming. All right.
There's climate change, but climate change is a naturally occurring event.
Well,
it's not an extraordinary.
Are you aware of it? Yeah, I mean, their climate change is it's just a huge, bogus money-making machine.
Progressive liberal radio?
This is not progressive. This progressive radio, we don't believe in progressives, nor do we believe in conservatives. We're just a straight-out independent liberal station, okay? And this is my belief.
Bottom line is, you know, you can't ask more of average American progressives.
Start your own party. You can ask more of it. Your own party. Get out of the Democrats.
To a third party. It just has to be somebody who can win and not just elect Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm. No. Well, Sarah Palin could actually win over the feeble-minded Kerrys and the other fools in there.
That is not a desirable outcome.
Yeah.
Mitt Romney is not a desirable outcome.
I agree with you.
To a clown like Kerry, I would canonize Romney. Next to Kerry? Absolutely. Or Lieberworm or any of these other clowns? Absolutely. In a minute, only because I dislike anybody, and it's almost absurd to even be talking about them because none of them are leaders. None of them have any integrity.
You get any Republican president. And I promise, if you didn't like the last Supreme Court decision, you're not going to like
that. That was absurd. That was totally
Republican
absurd.
Nominating one more conservative to that court.
Oh, that would be a horrible thing.
And that would be Armageddon for progressives in America generation.
And I was saying, and I know you're frustrated with this as well, but I'm saying
I went on the Angels TV show about 2 or 3 months ago, and I apologized. To my readers, for actually saying that Obama was in the tradition of JFK.
Thank you very much.
Which I thought then, I took Caroline's word for it, but Ted believes it, but it wasn't. You got to call it the way you see it. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. No, you saw it right. You didn't back down on that.
That's
a lot of integrity. I appreciate that.
But that's the problem. You know, Democrats have to grow a set of you-know-what.
Yeah.
And they have to fight for what they believe.
Absolutely.
And the Democratic disease is they forgot how to fight. My man was Robert Kennedy.
Mm. You know, mine too. Actually, I had a big heart for Robert Kennedy.
Yeah. He was the last great progressive fighter.
He was a liberal man.
I didn't have any
faith in Ted Kennedy, quite frankly.
He became part of the problem in Washington, D.C.
That's what it was.
Yeah, but at least he got a lot of stuff through.
What did he get through?
Anything through that means anything.
Yeah, but what did he get through? The No Child Left Behind, that left everybody behind,
I could kick off the bills, because I worked with Ted Kennedy on many things.
So did you like that No Child Left Behind thing?
Rights, voting rights, human rights.
Yes.
Lot of the what has happened, he was at the center of, and if he was around, we'd have had a damn better health care bill than Obama negotiated with hospital and drug lobbyists.
I got a feeling he probably would have been, they were best of buddies, and Obama thought he was God.
It would have been very interesting to have seen what Kennedy would have done on the health care bill, but I knew him well enough to think he would have fought like a lion, option, and would not have been making secret deals with lobbyists to get away.
I don't know.
The problem with Obama is that his whole presidency is wrapped with lobbyists.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, that's
and money.
That's what's preventing him.
That's the problem. You know, it all gets back to the money.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you talk about original sin. The original sin is the money.
Mm.
You know, money talks. And
if we weren't at war, we would have plenty of money for a great health care policy.
Yeah.
We'd have plenty of money for education and roads, and we'd have plenty of money to get small businesses going in this country, because that's really the engine that keeps people employed.
And they never should have given all the dough to the banks.
That's right.
The banks were going to screw the people. They never should have allowed that to happen.
Well, that happened because what is Obama surrounded by?
I mean, Obama picked a banker to regulate the bankers.
That's right.
And you know, I mean, you can't be worse than Timothy Geithner was at the New York Fed.
Oh, how about Ben Bernanke? He got to be worse. Nobody's worse than him, and he got reappointed.
I'll tell you, Bernanke's a saint compared to Geithner.
How could that be? He was his boss.
But Geithner was actually there doing his magic before Bernanke became the Fed chairman. Geithner was there on the Greenspan, and that was when the worst of the things happened. Okay, mm-hmm. Greenspan.
That's amazing how that he let the world go that route, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's a tragedy.
That's
it's a farce. It's a crime.
That was his job, you know, destroy the economy. I mean,
outrageous.
That's his mm-hmm. job. That's Bernanke's
job. That's not
what
Obama promised when he ran.
I don't think Obama knew what the hell he was promising. I don't even think he knows what he was doing running.
He was eloquent. He was eloquent.
It was somebody else's words. I mean, I don't even know if he understood what the hell he was talking
words,
about.
I don't think he knew what to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And what can I say? It's unfortunate, but...
But you know, it was terrible. He knew better what to do than anybody else, any of the other nine guys.
Well, he
that
knew
were running in the primaries.
How to get elected.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, that is not necessarily the best quality for how to be a president.
No, but he ran the best candidate.
Oh, he ran the best campaign. There's no question about that.
That guy was some kind of slick campaigner because, I mean, the money he took in... Especially the money.
These guys are like that.
Yeah, he got like I don't know $200-300 million just from just from donors under $200 who weren't registered, unregistered donors. They didn't have to register.
No, and a lot of them, I think, were refunds.
No, I don't think so. A lot of them, it turned out, and what I heard, a lot of them were overseas donors.
Foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but a lot of his small donors have left or gone quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I get emails from them, you know, people that would write me when I would write columns during the campaign or they'd hear me on radio or TV or something. And, you know, it's very sad. I mean, there were people who fought hard to change America, and what they got was a lot of the same wrapped up in some good rhetoric.
That's why they have
what can
to,
I say?
Yeah, but that's why they have to see, they have to, they, you know, the definition of insanity comes up again.
I know.
You know what I mean? You're standing there and you're a Democrat.
Oh, awesome.
I'm doing the Democratic thing. I'm a progressive Democrat doing the Democratic thing.
Well, that's why I'm supporting Phil Holter in Arkansas. I'd like to see.
Now, what is he?
A real populist progressive Democrat.
Progressive Democrat. What the hell is that? See, that's the same, it's the same thing. You're in the same mindset, you know.
Banks and the insurers, and he's running against a Democrat who is their guy or their gal.
But why is it that everybody who's a liberal is supposed to be a Democrat, you know, and everybody who's a Republican or a conservative is supposed to be a Republican? Why is that in this country?
Well, right. They don't have to be.
Yeah, but they don't have to be, but that's the only two parties that ever win.
The first two parties, especially the Democratic Party, has made such moves to repress any kind of real third party.
Well, yeah. But I will go back to 1912, when Theodore Roosevelt had been a Republican all his life. He left the Republican Party and founded his own party, and it's hard to win that way.
What I'm trying to say.
No,
it's hard to win like that. I mean, they've made it almost impossible.
And why should they have been allowed to do that?
Yeah, and Jimmy Carter in 2000, when they asked him if he would ever verify a U.S. election, okay? he says absolutely not.
No, well.
Absolutely. He says that it's totally an unviable and it's totally unviable and unverifiable method.
It was.
In
the end, you know, we elected somebody who was our guy, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't deliver.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know,
they couldn't. I think it was only because they couldn't rig the voting machines anymore, and they were so hated.
Well, there were so many people
that
wanted change in 2006.
Yeah, they were so hated by 2008.
The tragedy
is the Republicans.
We stood with the change. We won the election.
Yeah.
Our people came in, then they did business as usual. Now people are pissed off at Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remember that?
Isn't that, though, what happens all the time? Doesn't this sound familiar to you, like it's a pattern?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
if it's a pattern, doesn't that tell you that maybe this system
is wrong?
Is not right?
Why
maybe we need another party.
Huge problems with the system.
No, and I mean, and like I said, I gotta keep coming back to the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting the same results, and that's exactly what different results rather, and that's exactly what's happening. You're never going
to
get a different result.
No, I'm open
with
to
this two-party system,
but it would have to be somebody who could win.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing is you end up electing a right-wing Republican like Palin.
Or a wingnut lefty. Stalinist, whatever he could be. You got crazies on both sides, and all we're trying to do is draw the line between insanity and reality. And I think,
I hear you.
And we try to do that on this station, and that's why we ruffled you up a little bit.
Oh no, that's fine.
But
you can take it.
We're used to good.
I like a good.
We very much enjoy talking to you and wrapping you up a bit, and we'd love to have you back.
Yeah, we would.
I hope you'll come back and visit with us and talk to us some more.
Nice to do it.
All right.
Great. Thanks for being with us, Ben.
Bye-bye now.
Good night.
And that was Brad Podowski, and you can get him to check out his work on The Hill.
Yep, .com. Yep,
and,
that's Brent Podowski.
Interesting guy.
Yeah, very nice guy, and Leo really roughed him up there, but he could take it.
But there's no way. Nobody could ever defend Gary to me.
Howard Dean, I couldn't go
Howard
for
Dean,
either.
Forget about it. Get my book. One of my essays is Howard Dean, the Judas Goat, okay? And the other one is, you know, I raped Carrie over the coals on this thing, and
raising a red flag in front of Leo. He was fuming here on this end.
You can't do that. Yeah, you know,
but in the meantime, Leo, you need to give us a station ID.
Yes, this is WQQQ 103.3 FM. Okay, that ends the show. That was our interview with Brad Podowski, and you can check his work on thehill.com. And thank you so much for listening, and I hope to join us tomorrow night when we go into the fourth dimension, and Friday night with George Dixon. We remain in the fourth dimension, but anyway, we hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy the show, and talk to you tomorrow. Good night.